Welcome to Accounting High.
There's a psychological anchor that gets planted with a client when you offer them bookkeeping and accounting services. They are anchoring you in as the reporter, not the strategist. They think of you as the bookkeeper. You're the girl that does my books. You're the guy that does my taxes. And when you then try to also sell them on the strategic things, they're like, well, no, you're the one that does my books. I need a CFO to help me. It's almost impossible to sell someone on the accounting and then try to upsell them into CFO.
May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to Accounting High. It's freshman year at a brand new school. Here, we have no rules in place as we're on a mission to set our own traditions. So hang tight and learn with us as we grow. At Accounting High, you can expect to gain knowledge in a completely different way than what you may be used to, with some fun and oftentimes colorful conversations. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here's your chance to be a part of an unforgettable experience redone. While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you. In addition, share this episode on social media, tagging us at Accounting High. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
The events and suggestions are not to be taken lightly. Children should not partake in the listening
of this podcast.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and the King.
We're going to have a problem here.
Class is in session. We got a very special guest faculty with me, the Michael King, CFO Accelerator. Michael, thanks for joining me.
It's an honor, brother. So excited to finally be here. I feel like I've finally arrived, you know?
You have arrived. And this is kicking off, or this might be summer school or kicking off sophomore year. We're in that in-between phase of school years. So you come at an opportune time. And we got a lot to discuss today. We're going to talk about coaching. We're going to talk about community. We're going to talk about events. We're going to talk about CFO. We're going to talk about all the stuff you do, working yourself out of a job.
I love it, man. Let's do it.
So,
I feel like I've got to like cool my voice up a little bit because you've got just such that like midnight radio DJ, like suave voice. I feel like I got to up my vocal game.
You sound great. Your video's awesome. You be you. I've been working on this radio voice for over 200 episodes. So
I feel it.
But I love what you're doing. I love the stuff that you got on LinkedIn. Your audio and video quality is always amazing. Everything that I've seen, like high production stuff on there. You got a pretty big following on LinkedIn too. It's like almost 12,000 followers on there. Always a lot of engagement, always adding value and always delivering value. You got a great marketing team for your brand. And your brand now is the CFO Accelerator, coaching, courses, and community for fractional CFOs and accountants looking to scale their advisory firms to 6 or 7 figures.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah, man. It's great. You know, we started my firm 7+ years ago now. And I remember there were several times in my journey that I wanted to call it quits. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what I was doing. And I looked for somebody that could help me figure it out, you know, somebody that was willing to share the story of their journey and help me do it faster and smarter. And I couldn't find anybody. And I promised myself 4 or 5 years ago, I said, if I ever figure some of this stuff out, I want to be the one that helps the next generation of fractional CFOs behind me. And it's so awesome to be able to even be here and talk about this stuff.
So you're accelerating somebody else's journey through that so they don't have to waddle through 4 or 5 years just trying to figure it out.
To me, it's really about accelerating impact. Most of us that get into the game of fractional CFO services, we want to make an impact. We want to help small business owners. We want to help the employees of small businesses, but we want to help our families. We want to help ourselves. We want to help our communities. And I think that as fractional CFOs, we have this really unique opportunity to create a level of impact that I would argue no other vendor out there is able to have. So for me, it's about accelerating impact for people.
Mm, I love that. That might be work its way into the title of this somehow. I like that a lot. So let's go into your firm and what you guys did as a firm. Like, what were your offerings?
Yeah, so when we started, you know, it was kind of a hodgepodge of doing whatever somebody was willing to give us money to do, you know. And my story started on Upwork 7 years ago. That's where we got our first, 15, 20, I don't know how many clients, was just on Upwork and looking for financial stuff. I mean, it was really all over the map. And over the course of the years, and really about 5 years ago is where we got it dialed into our kind of core offering that we have today, where it's a very standardized package, a very set scope of work, a very set price. And really that's kind of evolved to where it's at today. Today we have three packages that we offer, but one of the key things for us in our ability to scale as a firm and our impact was really dialing in those services and making it a systematic, repeatable process so that we could have both effectiveness as fractional CFOs, but also efficiencies as a business.
Repeatable process. Processes, that's a really big thing for a business owner to figure out, because a lot of us, especially entrepreneurs, we don't like systems. We don't like processes. We like to come up and figure out new things and figure out new ways to do stuff. Once we get a system, we want to tinker and change that. How'd you fight against that?
It's really understanding what your goals are. I mean, if you know where you're driving and what's important to you and why it is that you do what you do, and you're able to remind yourself of that when you want to squirrel and tinker with things and kind of use that as a North Star, it helps you set some of those things aside and stay focused on what it is that's truly important to you. And I think it's important to remember that it's not that we don't do the things as entrepreneurs that we want to do. It's not saying that you can't do those anymore. But if you want to build a team around you and you want to scale, you've got to be more disciplined. And I'm as guilty of that as anybody. You know, I love all the latest, the greatest tools and widgets. And every time Apple has a new product release, you know, I'm there ordering the thing. But what I've learned, Scott, is the more of those things that I lean into and tinker with, the more I'm holding my team back. The people that I've hired because they're great at what they do, they can't just constantly have new stuff thrown at them. And so, like for us, we adopted EOS and our both of my businesses now. And that EOS, those quarterlies and annuals, that's my opportunity to put some of those new ideas in front of the team and say, like, all right, do we have the bandwidth, the capacity to investigate them, to try them out, and then to roll them out? So the team's not, you know, ready to burn the firm down all the time because they're frustrated with me. But it also gives me that opportunity to know that, yeah, we can do some things, but we've just got to be a little more disciplined and methodical about it if we want to hit the big goals that we've set for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds very parallel to the journey I'm on and still on. There was something you said to me during our first conversation that stuck with me that I've been repeating too, is you worked yourself out of a job at the firm. I'm still at that. I have done that, and I haven't gone back to go and make bigger goals at my firm. I worked myself out of a job, and I've got something else I'm working on, but I haven't gone back and said, now it's still time to grow this firm. Everybody's happy. It's the same thing. Like, I used to find new tech, new tools. I always wanted to change things, and that frustrated them. So by me getting out of the way, they're thriving. Everybody's happier than they've ever been. And we're just, you know, revenue's higher than it's ever been. Profitability's higher than it's ever been, but it's not as big as my ego or where I wanted it to be. And so I kind of gave up trying to grow that as fast as I did and what I wanted to do. I would have marched on to try to get to 10 million at my firm if that was, you know, if I was still in there. So they're happier. Everybody's happy. I worked myself out of a job, so I needed to occupy my time with something else. It sounds like you did that same thing.
That's exactly what happened. You got to a point where the ship was running pretty smoothly. You know, the team kind of knew how to handle the challenges that were thrown at them. We were able to execute on our core deliverables really, really well. And I was bored. You know, I'm sitting in my chair that's over there one day, and I got a DM on some social media platform again from somebody that says, "Hey, I'm thinking about starting CFO services. Is that something you do? Do you do any kind of like coaching, or do you have any pro tips or anything that you could help me with? And I said, yeah, you know what? I'm kind of bored. So rather than tinkering with the thing that's not broke over in my firm, I said, well, let's just start a whole new business. And that was a little over 2 years ago now. That's where the CFO Accelerator was born. Is, you know, I heard people asking for help. How'd you do it? Can you help me? And I said, you know, what a amazing blessing that I could give to others to help them extend and expand their impact. You know, I can show them some of the things that work for me. Maybe they can apply a few of those to their firm to help them grow faster or impact more people. And so it was on my little lounge chair one day about 2 years ago that I decided to kick off the CFO Accelerator.
Dude, that's exciting, scary. Like it's thrilling to solve more problems and to help more people in an entirely different venue. I mean, it's the same, and it's what you know, and now you're teaching people what you learned too. And that's that next stage of life too, as you grow and as you find your strengths. I think teaching is always that next frontier, and becoming a better mentor to others, a coach, building community. That all comes with that. And I feel like that's the road I'm on too. That's the path I'm on. And before we start talking about that path, let's go back to the firm and let's talk about some of the problems, some of the tech that you were using there.
Yeah, I think that for most firms, the first glass ceiling they hit is the same one that I hit, where I'm trying to do all things for all people. And you can't scale that. You just can't scale it. It makes so many things challenging. When you've got a super broad scope of work, or every client is a one-off, then it's impossible to put systems and processes and procedures in place because every client's different. When you're working in 15 different industries, serving clients in all these different industries, you don't learn the ins and outs and the things that make those industries tick. It's hard to establish yourself as a thought leader because you're not a thought leader in any of those places. And I think most people can't get past that barrier because there's this idea of scarcity. You know, if I niche down or I go all in on one package or one industry, there's not going to be enough business out there for me. And I'm like, you know, just look at the data. There's millions and millions of small businesses in the US. Your firm needs, you know, 20 of them to do 7+ figures a year. The scarcity is not there. So that was the first hurdle, is like saying, okay, I'm going to come up with a scope of work so that I can have the efficiencies and those kind of things, the systems, the processes, the procedures. But then once you commit to that, what I found was I didn't want to have a massive team. You know, I wanted to have some just industry amazing expert fractional CFOs on my team. But the problem was they're spending such a high percentage of their time doing a lot of tactical data related work. And where I needed them to be was on that thought leadership work. I needed them to be in front of clients, sharing perspectives, helping develop financial strategies. And QuickBooks, great in so many ways, but you're just really limited on the data manipulation you can do. And so in order to do the strategic work, whether it's forecasts, projections, budgets, you've got to get the data out of QuickBooks. And so what we were doing is just spending an inordinate amount of time every month. And this, I was doing the CFO work back in the day. And so this was me and my team. You know, you're exporting data out of QuickBooks, you're importing it into Excel or Google Sheets or whatever tool you decide to use. And then you're, you know, redoing all your equations, you're validating everything in there, you're reformatting. And you get to a point where the blessing of having the focus and the scope of work has resulted in more clients, but more clients means that you're spending more time doing a lot of this tactical data manipulation and data analytics work. And I realized that, like, my team can only handle so many CFO clients because they're spending so much time on this data work. And I said, you know, I could go hire somebody to do this manually, but I don't want to add additional headcount to the team. It kind of kills my margins. Even if I, you know, offshored the work, there's all kinds of inefficiencies that go along with that, not to mention human error. That's the big one, is, you know, anybody can make a mistake with that. And you make one formulaic error and it throws off everything. And so there's single points of failure for all these things to go wrong, not to mention the increased cost.
All those reference errors.
All those reference errors.
Reference, and you don't even know where it started. Yeah.
And so I said, we've got to solve for this because, you know, when we sat down and tracked how much time Carlos and I were spending on just data manipulation, we realized we could handle 2 to 3 times more clients each if we weren't fooling with data every month. And so I went out on this search. I said, there's got to be something out there that allows us to seamlessly integrate QuickBooks with our data tool of choice. We I know a lot of the FP&A people are going to get all super judgy out there,
sure,
but I don't care. I'm here for it. I like Google Sheets. For what we do, Google Sheets is great. And so I said, how do I connect the data inside of QuickBooks with Google Sheets?
And that's it's cloud. It's the cleanest cloud solution that there was.
It is. And, you know, emailing version 1, version 2, final, you know, back and forth just didn't make sense. So Google Sheets is great for us. It's easy to share with our clients. But I said that this is a multiple 6-figure problem for me, you know, because for us, a CFO client's worth $5,000 plus a month. And so if I said I can increase one CFO from being able to handle 5 clients a month to 10 or 12, that's a multiple $100,000 to pushing $1 million problem.
Sure.
And so I said, I want to solve this. And
that, you want to leverage their time.
Exactly. You know, getting the most out of their time, the highest value out of their time. And plus the fractional CFOs, the folks that are the industry leaders, they don't want to be spending their time screwing with you know, references.
Yeah.
That's not where their passion is. And so, you know, there's all kinds of personal and business reasons to solve that problem.
Yeah. So what was the solution then?
Well, drum roll, please.
Yeah.
So a bit of Googling, and I come across GAcon, and I'm looking at their website, and it's seamlessly connect QuickBooks to Google Sheets, and 100% customizable. And it's, you know, for the low price of, you know, tens of dollars a month.
Yeah, it's not that much.
No, it's ridiculous. And at first I'm skeptical, right? There's sure. No way I can solve this problem. There's got to be something to this. There's always a catch, you know, like, well, what you guys want to do, it won't work. It only works if you pull in these standardized reports. You know, we can pull in a standardized P&L or a standardized balance sheet, and we don't do any kind of anything crazy, but we have our own internal, you know, templates and reports that we use that have our branding on them and our fonts and our color preferences and all those kind of things. And a certain way that we like to display it, both in terms of data with numbers, but also charts and graphs. And so I'm looking, I'm like, I don't know, are they going to be able to do this? And so we did the trial and we made some pretty good progress with it, but there were a couple things that we couldn't quite figure out, Scott. And so I emailed support and told them, hey, this is what we've been able to do. This is what we're trying to do. Is there a way to do this? And their support blows me away. I mean, the response was nearly immediate. And they're like, oh yeah, it's absolutely possible. And they walked us through those last couple of steps to have our fully customized CFO reports inside of our dashboards with data that's real-time updated. It's two-way data communications between QuickBooks and Google Sheets. And I think the term like game changer is misused or overused, but it literally was for us because this one simple platform that's like 10 to 20 bucks a month has now solved this problem. We were spending a little over 40 hours a month on manual data importing, exporting, and manipulation. And within a few hours of playing with GAcon, that problem was eliminated.
And then it's eliminated across clients too, because you create one template that you can use across multiple clients. You can connect somebody that has 3 businesses. You can connect one sheet with all 3 of their business data.
It's one of the interesting things that I've learned in my journey as a fractional CFO firm owner. The bigger clients you work with, they typically have multiple entities. You know, and if they'll have the holding company and then a couple of operating companies and then the management company, all the different things that we set up for tax purposes. And a lot of times they want to see the roll up. They want to see the roll down. They want to see this. And so GAcon allows you to do that with
consolidate.
One. Yeah, the consolidation for the roll ups is ridiculous. And like you said, you set the template up one time and then you just copy and paste it across. And
And not that you're messing with this, but even if they had one business in Xero and businesses in QuickBooks, you could still export it all to one sheet and connect it all to one sheet.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And so we've eliminated each of the problems. So problem one was the, 40 hours a month per CFO with the data manipulation. We've also got the issue of just human error that gets involved in that process. And then another thing that I think is really important that a lot of times we underestimate the value of is the consistency in what we do, right? Just from the client's perspective, to have that consistent deliverable every single month, it really does elevate the perception of the value of the brand. And we were able to eliminate all of that with one platform. And that's why we've been with them for years.
Yeah. Well, brand is so powerful, keeping that. And that's what we're going to also talk about today too. But I love this. So GAcon, for anybody listening, check them out. It's acon.services. There's so many things you can do with it, because we didn't even talk about the two-way. The second part of the sync is you can upload a bunch of data into your sheet or pull it from one place, manipulate it a little bit, and then push it into QuickBooks too, which is a whole third aspect of this, you know, solving a different problem.
There's so many different uses, especially if you're offering accounting services as well, where you want to manipulate data outside of QuickBooks, because it's, let's be honest, it's easier in a lot of cases. You can view it different ways. And so you can make a lot of those changes right in Google Sheets, and it's automatically going to push them back into QuickBooks. I think the best use case I've seen of that is those Ask My Accountant items, you know, where you get a list for your clients. They tell you what category they go into. Normally, you'd have to take that list, go back into QuickBooks, update everything based on the client feedback. You can connect your chart of accounts right to your client dashboard in Google Sheets, make those updates, and it's going to automatically push those chart of accounts updates back in, so you don't have to go back and manually do it and double the work.
That's incredible. So not only is it great for the CFO forecasting, reports, dashboards, and manipulation of that aspect of the data, the viewing of the data, but also on the back end, manipulating it and getting it in there so it is correct, so your reports look legit and they're correct. So it works hand in hand in different aspects of it, on the back end and on the front end too.
I'm a big fan of simplicity, Scott. I talked a lot about, to my audience, about simplicity in the firm, and I think that I'm very protective of the platforms that I add to my firm. I mean, we seven-figure firm, we don't use a lot in the way of technology, right? Because of the simplicity. And so, you know, my tech stack is literally Carbon, Ignition, GAcon.
Oh, wow.
That's it. That's what we use. You know, and then the Google suite of things as well. I mean, that's it. That's everything it takes to run a seven-figure firm. And so I'm like, this is worth its weight in gold. You know, if you want to get beyond having one or two clients, even if you don't want to grow a team, you got to check out GAcon. It's just it's a no-brainer.
No-brainer, yeah. Well, that sounds just like our tech stack at our firm. Carbon, Ignition, and because we're Xero, we start and use GAcon too for different things, more of the accountant side. But let's talk about this CFO stuff, because
let's do it.
You know, I always like to talk about it on the show, and I worked at it and I tried to get it implemented in our firm, but because we're not niched and because we're not going too deep with our clients, you know, we don't have an industry vertical. It was very like what I was able to offer for clients myself was advice as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, and give them advice to run their business based on the mistakes and lessons I've learned. It's hard for my team to do that. They want to look at what's happened and they want to report and talk about what's happened. That's how they were trained. That's their accountants. Yeah. That's all they've ever wanted to do. And I know that if we solved a problem for an industry and we marketed directly to them, I think my team could offer a lot more value in forms of advice and advising clients. We haven't done that yet, and I think that's my roadblock at this point now. That's also why I dipped out and I'm doing other things. So tell me first, at your firm, do you have market, you know, an industry vertical that you guys market to?
So the quick answer is yes, but...
Ooh, we got a but.
I got a big but, I can't lie.
Here we go. I already got the wrapping. Yeah. Already Sir Mix-a-Lot. Go for it, yeah.
I mean, we just in the last year started really niching down, right? And so I'll tell you, you can definitely get, you know, high six figures or beyond without having the niche. But there's a couple of things you said that I think are really important to point out and kind of highlight. One is you talked about your team and the fact that they want to do the reporting stuff. And it's a completely different skill set to do what I call the perspective stuff. You know, they've spent their entire careers, their education, learning how to do the reporting stuff. They're passionate about it, and it's hyper important to business owners to have the reporting, if for no other reason, to stay compliant with taxes, right? And also to make sure the business owner knows where they're at today. It's a completely different skill set and passion set to do the forward-looking work. And I think that sometimes we try to I don't want to use the word force it on those folks that have their passions in the reporting and the rearview mirror looking work. And we try to get them to do the forward looking work. Instead, I think it's more important to go find the people that like the strategy, that like the forward looking stuff, and partner them up with the people that are doing the reporting, because it's a team effort. One can't exist without the other. Yeah. And so I'm like, let's not try to get the folks that are doing this stuff and try to change what they're doing and what they love doing. Let's find people that have that other skill set. Now, when it comes to marketing is definitely a lot easier when you niche down, but marketing is such a broad term. You know, when we say marketing, you know, what does that mean? I define marketing as just the ability to go out in the world and tell people what you do. And sure. Sales is the ability to convince them to give you money to do it, right? It's a really simple definition to me. And so there's a lot of ways that one can market. And I actually was just teaching on this inside of my accelerator program yesterday. I think for a lot of us in our industry, because of where we come from, we have this kind of myopic view of what marketing really is. And we tend to think that marketing means social media or Google Ads. Like, that's marketing. But if we go back to that definition that I just offered, which is just going out in the world and telling people what you do, that opens up a lot of additional doors into what marketing could be. What I've found to work best for advisory services is not social media. Like, if you noticed on LinkedIn, no one on my team talks about my firm on LinkedIn. There's a reason for that. Not because it's bad, but because it doesn't work as well as some of these other things. What works really well, because of the price that advisory services normally demand, and because of the access that you're going to have to the CEO and to the financials, there's a tremendous amount of trust and relationship that has to exist in order to get a client to say yes to you. And I've been doing this a long time, so I'd speak from a position of, like, I kind of know what I'm talking about on this. There has to be a level of trust and relationship to facilitate that thing moving forward. The best ways to develop that trust in that, you know, in marketing a lot, we'll talk about the know, like, and trust factor. Like, people have to know you, like you, and trust you before they'll do business with you. The fastest way to accomplish that in our industry is to get on a stage of some sort, whether that's on stage at a conference, or it could be on a podcast, or it could be on a panel discussion that's on LinkedIn. It could be live, it could be recorded. But the best way to get the trust that you need to have to get in as the fractional CFO the fastest is to get on stage and serve people, teach people, not sell to people.
Yeah.
Now, I say all of this because you don't necessarily have to be niched to do that. I mean, you can go get on stage and talk to online business owners or brick and mortar business owners or any business owners and talk, you know, teach them something about that thing that you're passionate about as a fractional CFO. And at the end, you can say, and oh, by the way, if you want to learn more about how you can work with me, I'll see you over here. Or you can go to this landing page, or, you know, text us at this number, whatever your call to action is. So you don't necessarily have to be niched in order to offer advisory services or scale advisory services, but it does make it easier. But the trick is, for a lot of us, we don't know where we want to niche down. I don't know. And I'll tell you, like, my firm.
Afraid of committing to one too.
Yeah.
I've had years of being afraid of committing. I'll have an idea, we're going to go into it, and then I lose interest, or I decide, oh, maybe this industry would be good too.
I love the saying, if you want something to pay off for you, you've got to be loyal to it. And so we can't just dabble. We can't just go in, try something for a month or 2 months and say, well, it didn't work, or I'm bored. We're going to try the other thing because the grass, look at it, it's so much greener over there. We've got to stay committed to things. So I would say, you know, minimum, if you're going to do it for 6 months, or do it for, you know, I would say a year is probably better. But again, if you go back to what are your goals and your vision for your firm, what kind of impact do you want to have? And then think through what industry can I get into that would allow me to do that in the way that I want to do it. You tend to not lose interest as fast or at all when you're passionate behind it. So,
all right. So let's go back to finding that forward-facing CFO, because the rebuttals and the what I get, what I hear back is where, you know, the criticism, or not the criticism, but the reason people fear it too is they're not going to make any money because those hires are a lot more expensive. You're going to pay them a lot more. The CFOs, the forecasters, the people that are going to be strategically looking forward, they cost a lot more. So how do you still make money when you're hiring people that are, you know, at minimum, at least 100, over 100,000, 150, something like that?
As a firm owner, how do I make money on that?
Yeah.
I actually pay based on a percentage of the revenue that those CFOs oversee. So if I have a client that's paying me, you know, $5,000 a month, my CFOs get 40% of that.
Okay.
And so that makes it very forecastable and predictable for me. I know that every new client that comes in is going to be between, now we're $5,500 to $8,000 a month based on which of the three packages they're on. I know that I'm going to pay 40% for my cost of services, and it becomes very predictable for me. So I always have, you know, fixed margins and know exactly what to expect. And I don't have to worry about paying a ton of money out of pocket if things aren't working out. You know, if the CFO loses a client, they lose that part of their paycheck. So it ends up incentivizing the CFO to deliver a great service for the client. And it helps me know what my margins are going to be and how to scale my company.
So how do you start with that? Do you have them as contractors? Do you hire them as employees? What's the
We use the W-2 model.
Okay.
I'm not a lawyer, and so I don't take any of this to be legal advice, but the way I run my firm, if you look at the IRS and the Department of Labor's definition of employees, they're using my email addresses, they're using my processes and procedures, they're using my systems, I'm overseeing their work, I'm giving them feedback.
They're an employee.
It hits all the checks in the box for an employee. There's people in my programs that do the 1099 model. The firm owner basically acts as a sales conduit. So they go out and get the business, they tee up the client, and then you're off to serve them, you know, kind of however you want to as the fractional CFO. I like to have more control over my brand, and I want to have a more consistent experience. So it's worth it to me to eat the payroll taxes and the other labor burden items for them. And honestly, I find that people tend to be more loyal and committed when you make them an employee versus a subcontractor. It's a more relational experience than a transactional experience.
So in that case, you're still going to, on the short term, people have to prepare themselves, brace themselves to take a hit, because you're going to probably have to pay them something until you fill up their client base.
So what I do is I guarantee a $10,000 a month minimum. So when you come on during onboarding and everything, I'm going to pay you $10,000 a month, regardless of your client load. And then once you're done onboarding and we get your roster filled up and it grows beyond the $10,000 a month, then you'll make above that. But you're going to make at least
$10,000 a month. Yeah, base salary of 120, which is around that range that I was just saying earlier. So at least you're covering that on the front end, and then you just fill up their workload, and it takes, you know, what's their, and you said roughly they could work with 10, 11 clients or
10 to 12, depending on the size. You know, you start getting 3, 4, 5, 8-figure clients, then it's going to be somewhere between 8 and 10 total. If you're handling mostly 7-figure clients, you can handle 12.
Yeah. So it's not going to take that much, you know, if you're doing a minimum, it's only going to take a couple clients for them, maybe 3 clients, 4 clients for them to hit that minimum or be above that minimum.
Exactly. And it gives them an upside of, you know, multiple 6 figures.
Yeah.
And it's Monday to Friday kind of work.
Yeah. So practical steps into getting started on this is, you know, have that like system in place. If you're doing, so how about your firm? You are doing any of the accounting work too, or just the CFO?
We are just advisory, 100% advisory. There's no bookkeeping, tax prep, none of the compliance types of things. So we've got our core CFO package, and then that's the monthly CFO call, a biweekly check-in call, communication via Slack or phone, Zoom as they need it. We have our advanced package, which includes tax strategies. So we use CoreV to help come up with tax strategies. I forgot that in my tech stack earlier.
Yeah, I was going to say, get another tech partner.
And then we have our executive package. Sometimes we'll call it our EOS package, where we do quarterly strategy meetings that are 2 to 3 hours each with the leadership team. And then once a year, the CFO actually goes on site for 2 days to do annual strategy planning with the clients. And that's an $8,000 a month for that package.
Oh, that's dope. So you've productized a lot of this advisory stuff. You know, you're not, I see a lot of CFOs, they're just doing it on an as needed basis, you know, create this model for this or create that for this. You're doing all of those things, but under one price, and you've got a repeatable system.
Yeah.
And that's the processes that we were talking about too.
It makes it easier to hire. It makes it easier to onboard. It makes it easier to manage. We're able to ramp up and show value for clients faster. And so we really stick with that. But there's some limitations that I'm comfortable with that others might not be. So an example is we don't work with any clients that are trying to raise money, because our thing doesn't include pitch decks and investor briefs and all the things that go along with raising money, because I don't see a way to standardize that.
Sure.
In a way that makes sense for us with the efficiencies that we want to hit with our CFOs and to be able to handle. There's some people that do a great job with it. That's just not our thing. So we don't touch, you know, like SaaS companies that are going out to raise money. We don't work with people that are trying to have an exit in the next couple of years for the same reasons. We're super simple. And, you know, our thing is blue collar construction companies. So we're working with general contractors, roofers, concrete companies, plumbers, electricians, HVAC. That's who we work with, because we've been able to really make that standardized, systematized product offering, like you said.
So you know what to say no to. So you're not wallowing in the shallows, saying yes to everybody and doing this and chasing the dollar. You know who your ideal client is, and you have an industry vertical too. So
we do now, but my journey went through the muck of going after everything, because I didn't know.
Right.
I didn't know who to go after. I didn't know what the offer should be. And that's part of why I'm passionate about teaching others now, to help give them some of those ideas for inspiration on how they can get out of the muck faster.
Yeah. And a lot of those construction companies, they're going to deal with a lot of the same things with other insurances or landing a job. They're going to need the same information for
all
the insurance company.
Yeah. It's all the same, like 5 to 10 problems, everybody in those industries. So we start to look really smart.
Yes, 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 yes. And it's just by reputation too. And you build that reputation, you build that trust. Let's talk about some of the fears to address for somebody that's looking to get into this. I know that was something we talked about on our first call, some of the biggest fears and the fears that people have. What are some of those?
I think the big ones are around scarcity. One, like we talked about a little bit earlier, how am I ever going to find clients? There's not enough clients for me. And I was talking about this at my conference. There's millions and millions of small businesses out there, but on LinkedIn, between the title of virtual CFO and fractional CFO, there's only 7,000 on all of LinkedIn, virtual or fractional CFOs. And I'm like, this is such an amazing time to get into the fractional CFO game, because the reality is there's not a lot of competition, but the idea of fractional CFOs is growing like wildfire throughout the business community. There, more and more people are hearing about it. More and more business owners are demanding that strategic help. And so if you're one of these people that's like, I just don't know, I'm like, look, you don't even have to be good at sales and marketing. You just need to show up, because there's a ton of business out there to be had. So that's one thing. The other one is this idea or this fear around, I'm not ready. I've never been the CFO of a major company before. I don't know that I have the resume or the expertise to offer fractional CFO services. I feel like an imposter. And what I try to remind people is, you're not applying to be the fractional CFO of Tesla or Apple or Google. But my guess is, if your head is even thinking about doing fractional CFO work, you probably have what it takes to help a $1 or $2 or $3 million a year, you know, construction company or electrical contractor or law firm. Right? That you don't need complex tax strategies and these crazy models to be able to help them out. They all need the same fundamental things. They need to understand their financial statements. They need to understand cash flow forecast. They need budgets. They need projections. But most importantly, they need your perspectives. They need you looking at what they've done and where they're going, and your ability to kind of look and proactively identify things that maybe are setting them up for failure or things that they need to slow down on or go faster on. That's really what they're paying for. And so I'd say, like, if you've been in the game for 5-6 years, you probably have what it takes to at least serve smaller businesses in those industries. And as you continue to serve clients and you get more and more experience and more perspectives, you can move up that revenue chain. We work with clients that are doing $20, $30 million a year now. We certainly weren't able to do that 5 years ago. But again, the ramp's only been 5 years. So I would say if you're in that place where you're like, I don't know, then do some research. What do fractional CFOs offer? I got a whole series on the services fractional CFOs should offer. You can check them out free. They're on YouTube and on my podcast called The CFO Report. But check those out and just say, like, hey, I can do forecasts. I can do projections. I can do budgets. Then try it out. Get in the game.
So what about for a firm? Because you are specialized. That's what you guys do. So you have a very clean tech stack. You're not dealing with all the tax platforms and all the other stuff. What about a firm that's an accounting firm that's doing accounting, bookkeeping, tax, all the compliance stuff? What do you suggest? How do you suggest they get started?
It's challenging. I'm not gonna sugarcoat. It's challenging and maybe not for the reason that you would expect. What I've learned time and time again from my firm, because we used to offer those things, and now I've coached hundreds of other firm owners, and I've seen this very consistently. There's a psychological anchor that gets planted with a client when you offer them bookkeeping and accounting services. They are anchoring you in as the reporter, not the strategist. They think of you as the bookkeeper. You're the girl that does my books. You're the guy that does my taxes. And when you then try to also sell them on the strategic things, they're like, well, no, you're the one that does my books. I need a CFO to help me. Even if you spent your whole career as a CFO and then you started a firm doing books and now you're trying, like, they've already anchored you in psychologically as that person that is doing tactical work. It's almost impossible. And I would argue that it's probably impossible at scale. I mean, the onesie twosies, you'll see some, but it's almost impossible to sell someone on the accounting and then try to upsell them into CFO. I did that for years and it didn't work. And I'm like beating my head against the wall. And then one day I had this aha moment where we had a client. I said, well, we'll start with them doing the accounting stuff. We're going to blow them away with how amazing and smart we are and how handsome our beards are. And then we're going to upsell them to CFO. And so we're like just going above and beyond, way outside of scope of work. And then one day the CEO, he emails me and he's like, hey, Mike, we're looking to hire a fractional CFO. Do you know anybody that does that? And it's like, oh gosh, are you kidding me? Because I knew that if he was asking me that, there was no way I was going to be able to tell him it. Yo, over here, you know, me. And I realized, like, oh, the problem is you've got to lead with CFO services, sell them on the advisory, the strategic work, and then you can sell them on the accounting and bookkeeping after.
Because that's like an afterthought.
It is. And so it's like an, oh, by the way, a lot of businesses like yours also struggle with books and accurate accounting records. I don't know if that's true for you or not, but if we get into the engagement and we realize that the bookkeeping isn't up to par, we would love to also handle that for you. And so you've anchored as the strategist, and now you're also going to offer this. We just decided to make the move and not offer the tactical work. For us, the margins just aren't there. The margin percentages are great, but the margin dollars relative to, again, this is us. Your journey and perspectives might be different. But for us, when we look at the margin dollars on advisory and then compare it to the headache, the risk, and the margin dollars on the compliance types things, it just wasn't worth it to us. I didn't want to have the team and have to deal with it. That wasn't where my passion was, but you can definitely do it. I know several people that are in the multiple seven figures that offer advisory and bookkeeping. They always lead with advisory, and most of them don't even mention on their website that they offer accounting services because they don't want that perception that they're bookkeeper.
Yeah, that's a great point. I never even heard anybody explain it like that because that's happened to us so many times. You know, like we had been trying to tell people this is what we also offer this. And so many times they're going to find somebody else outside of that because they see you as the technician. Yep. Yeah, they see you as the technician and you're checking the box, and they don't value that as much as they value growth. You know, the past versus the future.
On my sales calls, that's what I tell them. I said, they said, well, what does a fractional CFO do? And I said, well, you probably worked with a bookkeeper or an accountant. Maybe you have one now or you've had one in the past. Is that right? In fact, I was speaking on stage last week in Austin, and this is exactly what I said on stage. And, you know, the crowd says, yeah. And I go through what a bookkeeper does. They're telling you what happened last month, last quarter, last year, so you understand what your tax obligations are and all those kind of things. But let me ask you this. Can I assume that you've got, like, really big goals and dreams for your business? And, of course, the whole audience shakes their head. And I said, those things all live in the future, don't they? And they'll say, yeah. And I say, well, what a fractional CFO does is we help you look into the future. We help take those big goals and dreams and ambitions that you have and put a roadmap in place so that you know that the decisions you're making today are going to help you make those dreams become your reality in a year, 3 years, 5 years. And they're like, oh, that's what I need. And so, like, that's part of my talk that I do on stage or during sales calls is I call them out, like, those goals, those dreams, those aspirations, the roadmap. We're going to help you watch out for the potholes and the detours and the roadblocks so that you know that if it's safe to hire now, if the profitability is going to work. So it's really about painting that future-oriented picture of your services.
Comparison then, the historian versus the storyteller. The historian can still tell a story of the past and what's happened, but they're not doing any predictions. They're not navigating anything, and they're not fortune telling. The Right. storyteller is navigating you and telling a story and telling a fortune of the future.
You're Yoda.
Ooh.
Yoda, right? It's getting them to think differently and make smarter decisions as they move forward.
Yoda versus who? Who's the historian? Who's a good fictional historian?
Gosh, man, I don't know. I don't know any famous historians. Shame on me.
Yeah, I don't know.
I should have come armed with that metaphor. I won't let you down again, Scott. Next time, I'm going to be like,
no, we're good. We can still work on it. We still work on it.
But I do want to point out, like, it's important not to marginalize the work that bookkeepers and accountants do. And I'm not suggesting that you were, but it's a team effort.
I am an accountant, so I could. Yeah. I don't really marginalize what we do because I still do well. Like, our firm does well. We're good.
A lot of times people, as I do these, like, well, you know, the bookkeepers are important. I'm like, no, like, we're dead in the water as fractional CFOs without an amazing bookkeeper and tax preparer and all of this. Like, we're dead in the water, but it's a team effort. We're all part of in service to the client's goals.
Well, I love the way you framed it because it is very important, but it's the perception. It's how the clients perceive it. And honestly, they don't place a ton of value. That's why we're undervalued. And that's why we sometimes have to chase. You know, I hear this all the time. Firms are underpricing themselves because they're trying to chase the client because the client's comparing them to TurboTax or to QuickBooks. And in reality, those are just tools on top of what we can do. And we're undervalued. Like, this is a problem in the market. This is what we're talking about. And there is one way to increase your value is to offer advisory. But that also looks a little bit differently than the full-scale fractional CFO work. You know, you could offer advisory where it's just tax planning and helping them beyond just the compliance. That's different than what we're discussing and what we're talking about, which can also be very profitable, but it's a venture. And you have to really give the perception and market yourself as somebody that's the fortune teller, the storyteller, the Yoda. That's how you have to market yourself for somebody to want it, for you to be able to command those prices. If you want to market yourself as the historian and as the person telling the story, and that's the work we're going to do, you can still do that effectively and still make money doing it. But there is a way to bridge both of them together, and it's difficult.
It is. And the key words that I would really encourage everybody listening to this think about is you're going to offer them perspective, right? That's what the best business owners today want. They want additional perspective. Let them know you're going to challenge them. You're going to help them think differently about finance and, like, use those words, perspective, challenge, think differently. Really what our goal in marketing, whether you're selling advisory services, bookkeeping services, or furniture, what we want to do with marketing is raise the ambition of our audience. We want to raise their ambition. And so if you can look through the lens of whatever service or widget you're selling and use that as a way to raise their ambition, whether it's around their health, their wealth, their relationships, and connect the dots about how what you do is going to help their future self be better in some way around health, wealth, or relationships, you'll be successful. The other thing I would add to that is maybe you don't want to go full bore with advisory services, but you want to do something to set yourself apart from the TurboTaxes of the world. Do some basic cash flow forecasting. You know, I think cash flow forecasting is the most underrated tool any business owner can have. And I would argue that if you're at least a mildly competent bookkeeper, you have the chops to do a 12-month cash flow forecast or a six-week cash flow forecast. The reality is most business owners are hand-to-mouth with their cash. Most business owners, cash-related problems are the things that keep them up at night more than anything else. Am I going to be able to make payroll? How much? I got this huge tax bill come up. What am I going to do? If they had a basic cash flow forecast where they could look even 6 weeks into the future, much less a year into the future, and understand how much cash they're going to have, how much cash they're going to need so they can make smarter decisions, that alone gets you out of the conversation of TurboTax. That alone helps you go from $500 a month to $1,500 a month, that one thing.
Yeah, yeah. There's, and you could productize that too, just as an offering, sure, just for your current client base. Add that on top of whatever they're paying monthly, and that's a whole nother, like, just one-time project that you can continually go in and review throughout the year too.
Every month, we're going to get on a call. We're going to update your cash flow forecast. We're going to look at the things that you've got coming down the road. And we're going to look at some of those big expenses that you're thinking about making and determine if they're safe. I mean, just that little blurb right there is worth $1,000 a month more.
You can sell that as an annual package. You can say 10 grand up front, we'll do it once and we'll still review it, or $1,000 a month. You know, you're like giving them a bit of an option and a discount, and then you do it again the next year.
If you want to, I'll tell you what I see in the market right now. I know you weren't intending to go down this rabbit hole.
No, I love talking about this stuff. Yeah.
With the uncertainties of the economy that we're kind of in right now, a 10K sell on whatever is a big bite right now, especially if you've grounded as that historically lower monthly service fee. And it's like, I don't know if it's worth 10 grand. What I find is easier to sell is the month to month, and you can cancel or downgrade at any time. And so I've found it to be, you know, 10x easier to sell the month to month thing than to sell the one-time packages. Plus, I love recurring revenue. It's easier for me to do my own forecast and projections. I love monthly recurring revenue, you know? So anyway, test out if you want to sell it at a 10K package, that's great. I would rather offer it as a, you know, $1,000 a month or something like that. But I've just found that it's time and time again, it's easier to sell a $1,000 a month thing than a $10,000 thing. But
That's a great point. I was just fearing, like, you start doing something like that and then somebody loses interest in it 5 months down the road, or they're like, this really isn't doing it for me anymore.
Yeah, you use that though as tuition. Why did they lose interest? What happened? And normally the thing that's going to drop them off is you stop offering perspective. That's really what they want. They want perspective. They want to be challenged. They want to think differently. And so if you're just reporting, if you're just giving them a spreadsheet with a 12-month cash flow or 6 week or whatever you do, if that's all you're delivering, they will lose interest. What I think is key is that phone call where you're telling them what you see. You're connecting that cash flow forecast to their goals. That's where they keep coming back for more. So yeah, if you're just giving them a spreadsheet in a Loom video that's, you know, everything looks good, yeah, they're going to do it for a couple months and they're going to bounce. But if you're offering perspective and challenge and connecting that cash flow forecast to their goals and show them how that's a tool for them reaching their goals faster or with less risk, they're not going to go anywhere.
You got to make it a call they look forward to having too. Oh,
for sure. That's, I mean, 100%, Scott. Like, that's why when I'm on calls, I stand up. I have music playing in the background. I'm always smiling when they get on the call because of that Pavlovian response. I want them to look forward to the conversations that we're going to have. I want positive emotions associated with it, even if the finances aren't great, right? I still want to have that positive thing. So always start the calls off with something positive, with like gratitude kind of stuff. Because a lot of business owners, when they know that things aren't going well, there's, you know, negative emotions associated with it. And if they show up and you're grumpy face, you know, accountant Bill from the guy from The Office, who was the guy, right? But if you're that guy that like that's always kind of frumpy, then yeah, they're not going to want to get on the call. So you're actually onto something there. Create that environment where they look forward to talking to you, even if the news isn't going to always be great.
Well, you can deliver the bad news with a spoonful of sugar.
You can, but here's the other thing. If you deliver the bad news with a spoonful of sugar too often, they're also going to leave. Right. I talk, there's really four hats, four roles that you've got to lean into. And like, if you're listening to this, write this down. This is gold. Some of my people pay me thousands of dollars for this lesson. So I'll give it to you free right here. You've got to embrace the role of a cheerleader from time to time, right? Where you're celebrating them, they're celebrating the wins, right? You're saying out loud, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Do you remember when you were here, but now you're here? That's awesome, right? You've got to be a cheerleader from time to time. But you've also got to be a teacher from time to time. You've got to embrace that role of a teacher where you're explaining to them what's going on, right? A lot of business owners, you know, right or wrong, I see it with eight-figure business owners, they goof up the whole idea of gross profit margins. Like getting gross profit margins and they get confused and they'll do dumb stuff around it or they're not thinking about things the right way. So you've got to hit pause and go into teacher mode. Like, hold on, let me explain this concept to you again, because I think it's important for you to understand as the CEO. So you got to be the cheerleader sometimes, you got to be the teacher sometimes, but you've also got to be the challenger sometimes. Hold on, Scott. I know that you're super excited about going down this rabbit hole, but what if we also consider this? Or I don't think you're considering that. I think we've got to look at these two things. You've got to challenge them. You got to call them out. And then the fourth role is sometimes you got to be the disagreeer. And that's
what's the difference between that and a challenger.
The disagreeer is where you say you're flat out making a bad decision. I understand why you're trying to do this. I understand why you think it's a good idea, but I've been doing this for 20 years and I can tell you that you are screwing up at a high rate of speed if you go down this path. And I would say that's like 2% of the time you got to be a disagreeer, right? Normally the challenger, more of that Socratic way of looking at things is fine. And so if you're always the person that's bringing the bad news, though, with the sugar, the spoonful of sugar, they're going to leave you. Because like I've said a bunch of times in this episode, you've got to challenge them. You have to challenge them. You've got to push back sometimes. And if you're always the cheerleader, right, that spoonful of sugar person, I know the margin sucked this month again for the 8 month in a row, but you're trying, like, they're going to let you go. They need to know psychologically that there is a safety in having you around, that if they're doing something stupid, you're either going to challenge them or fully disagree with them. They need to know that they can trust Scott to call them out when they're doing something stupid. And when you have that mix of the cheerleader, the teacher, the challenger, and the disagreeer, they're never going to leave you. They'll never leave you. Recession, you'll be the last one that goes. COVID, you're the last one that goes because they know that they need you there to provide those different perspectives for them. Mm. They know you're not going to let them screw up. They know you're going to call them out.
I love that. It sounds like all the roles we need at Accounting High. The cheerleaders, we got the faculty, the challengers. That's all part of it. That's dope. This is a lot of perspective, gaining perspective on, you know, who you are too, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, and what you want to do. Do you have big dreams? Do you have big goals? This may be the direction for you to go.
If you like coaching too, I mean, I'll call it what it is. A lot of this, like those four hats, that's coaching. And so, you know, I would say if you're not willing to learn how to do those, you don't have to know today, but if you're not willing to embrace those and do those, the fractional CFO world may not be for you. The way I do it. I'm not saying I do it the right way or the best way by any means, but I've found that to have the impact I want to have, my team and I have to be the coaches that are doing those four things. And we've had tremendous success doing it for our clients. So
content, courses, coaching, and community. Those are
all the C's, man. All the alliteration.
Things that you could be doing to further your brand and to further your impact that you're having on the communities that you're reaching. And one thing we didn't touch on too, that's just pretty important when it comes to marketing. You know, you said you can stand up on any stage, but you don't know which stages to stand on. When you're marketing to a vertical or an industry, they have watering holes. They have places they go. They have conferences. They have, you know where to go. you know which stages you need to get on. You know who you need to talk to do that. So
you do. It makes life a whole lot easier. And one thing I want to kind of call out our industry real quick. Is it fair game to call
it out?
So I do. I've had some success on LinkedIn. I'm still learning LinkedIn. I've been doing it for about a year now. And one of the things that I see pretty consistently, that's a telltale sign that you're not marketing correctly, or as well as you could. And I see it so much in the accounting industry and fractional CFO, all the financial service industries. I want you to look at your engagement on your posts. And if you see that you've got a bunch of CPAs and accountants and fractional CFOs that are liking your post and commenting on your posts, and you're going after e-com businesses, SaaS businesses, plumbers, whatever your industry is, and they're not commenting and engaging on your posts, you're not speaking the right language. A lot of us, we feel good because we get great engagement, but I'm like, you're getting great engagement from other CPAs.
From accountants.
You're getting a great engagement. And people ask me all the time, like, why is it that I'm only getting accountants? And I said, because you're not using the language of the people you want to talk to. Business owners don't want to hear your 5 tips for improving the balance sheet. Business owners don't want to hear your 10-step carousel on cash flow forecasting. That's not the language they use. That's not the problems that they have. Right? You need to speak to their problems in their language on their level, and then they'll start engaging with it. And when they start engaging with it, that's when they start to become clients. They start to ask, well, hey, I had that same problem you were just talking about in my plumbing business or my e-com business or my SaaS company. Is that something you can help me out with? So I'd say, like, do an audit on your social media. And if you've got other people commenting on it, you probably need to refine your language. And so when you get that niche, it's a whole lot easier to figure out what their specific problems are, what language they use to describe those problems. And then you get less CPAs liking your post and more ICAs liking your post.
Or you can pivot like you did and market to accountants and CPAs.
I do both. I do both now. So, but my social media only to accountants and CPAs and fractional CFOs. You can't do both. You know, if you confuse the market, you lose the market. But like I said, the big bang for your bucks is being on podcasts or being on stage or panel discussions and those things that show thought leadership, not reels.
Well, knowledge workers are on LinkedIn, but I wouldn't think the construction workers and construction industry are on LinkedIn too much. They might be.
They are not as much as you think. So, you know, when you think of marketing like a funnel, the truth is I was on stage last week. I spoke to like 100 business owners about some KPIs and cash flow forecasting, right? Some of those people were interested, but weren't ready to give me their contact information or to move forward with me. But now they see me on LinkedIn, and maybe in 3 weeks, they might see a post. Not me personally, I'm talking in general because my LinkedIn isn't geared towards them. But they might see you when they're ready to move forward. Like, oh yeah, I remember that Scott guy. He was the guy that talked about this. I need help with that. But where a lot of us, what we're doing is we're using that LinkedIn or social media as our top of funnel rather than middle or bottom of funnel.
Right.
Right. Top of funnel, in my experience, has been those opportunities to speak, and then you reinforce the messaging with your social media. I've just not found that I needed to do that, the social media piece. But later this year, we're going to start because we have the bandwidth to start doing that now.
Why not?
My team later this year is going to start posting pretty consistently on LinkedIn to our construction industry ICAs.
That's what I've been talking to my team about. We just brought that up today in our meeting, trying to get them to be mouthpieces for the firm too, and get them involved in making some, just even simple as making explainer videos, YouTube videos for the simple stuff that we have to tell clients all the time, making little videos for that.
Good luck getting on camera. That's the big mental hurdle for a lot of people.
Oh,
actually just dropped a video on how to get more confident on camera on YouTube that's geared to our industry. So if you're somebody that wants to do video, but it scares the crap out of you, go to thecforeport.com. That'll take you right to my YouTube channel and good video.
Michael is the king of content and the king of all of this stuff, king of coaching. You know, you've given so much advice and knowledge and nuggets just from, just from the stuff that you do every day and the stuff that you're teaching. You had a 3-day conference. Tell me how more of our audience could find you if they're interested in learning more and more about this stuff.
Sure. Follow me on LinkedIn if you don't. So my name is Michael King. You can find me if you go into LinkedIn and search fractional CFO, you're going to see my face everywhere. I pretty much
he only needs 32 more followers to get to 12,000.
I'm so close.
Yeah, I'm so close
to the next vanity metric. It's so exciting. But yeah, follow me on LinkedIn. And then I also have a newsletter that I drop every Friday called the 5-Minute Fractional CFO. Every Friday, I share one actionable tip to help you start, scale, or optimize your advisory services. And the cool part is you can read it in 5 minutes or less. And you can
5-Minute Friday.
Yeah, you can go to my blog to subscribe to that absolutely free. So that's thecfoaccelerator.com/blog. We'll put that in the show notes below. And my favorite is the YouTube channel. So just go to thecforeport.com, and that'll take you right over to my YouTube channel. I drop content every single Tuesday. Again, it's those tips to help you start, scale, or optimize your firm. And you'll get a ton of value from those, I promise.
This is dope. Lots of systems, lots of advice. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
Also, just a reminder for anybody who wants to check out G8Con, that's another tool that you can have in your toolbox. So appreciate you, Mike. Class dismissed.